Soul. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent Firebird Book Award winner to share with you. He is David Grinnell, and his most recent winning book is titled Moonglade. David is a poet, author, and literary scholar from Cleveland, Ohio. He was born in 1992 in Norfolk, Virginia, but grew up in the suburb in Bedford. In 2014, he attended Cleveland State University and graduated with bachelor's in English. He specializes in romanticism, the Gothic, and draws inspiration from vulnerability. He reflects and portrays love alongside hope, melancholy, and occasional despair. He is currently a funeral director apprentice at St. John Funeral Home. He is an author in my neck of the woods, so welcome to the network, David.
Thank you, Pat. It's good to be here and truly excited to have our discussions.
Me too. Not often do I speak with someone who is in the Cleveland area, so that is a treat for me as well. And congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award, not just for Moonglade, but a previous book titled Ashes.
Well, thank you so much. And what's great about even the publishing house that I am an author for, Curious Corvid Publishing, is also an Ohio press out of Geneva, Ohio. So a lot of Ohio influences going on here.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you about Curious Corvid in Geneva. I love Geneva. My parents met in Geneva, so I attribute my existence to Geneva, Ohio. And we go all the time. We go to Eddie's and get hamburgers. Sometimes we play golf at that little local place. It's just, I love Geneva. It just feels...
It's a bit of a ways where I am, so I don't get to go up there that often. But according to what my publisher, Raven White, says, who lives up there, it's pretty beautiful, very country-esque.
It is. It's kind of a throwback to older and nicer times. I just get that feeling there. Tell me a bit about Curious Corvid Publishing. They specialize only in within certain genres, yes?
Yeah, so we write about the darker things of life. So that's pretty open to broad terms. We offer a diverse range of different voices, all from authors and poets who arrange from different parts of the United States, and also we have a few authors who are from overseas in the UK. So quite a diverse range of voices. You'll find several works that are, of course, Gothic fiction, horror. You'll see a couple from dark fantasy, sci-fi even. So we kind of branch out towards those genres, and then lots of poetry, dark poetry, a lot about mental illness, and kind of like the themes that I write as well. You know, we all have a voice of our own that's truly unique. So Curious Corvid was founded only a couple of years ago. I remember when I self-published, because I wanted to test out the waters to see how the publishing world works. And then of course, when you ever do something online, the computer picks out the logarithms of what you've kind of done. So like on social media, Facebook, I saw advertisements for publishing stuff. And then one of those advertisements happens to be Curious Corvid Publishing with their Raven logo on there. Mm-hmm. Of course, me being a Gothic lover and big fan of Edgar Allan Poe as well, I was drawn to the Raven icon that they had, so I clicked on their website, and they didn't have much at that time. It was just a pretty basic website, and, you know, I saw the founder, Raven White, and I thought that was an interesting name, and so they didn't have any authors at that time, really. So I'm like, huh, is this, you know, a viable company? So then I thought, well, might as well just reach out. So I reached out to Raven spontaneously through Instagram, and she responded back. And what was really nice is compared to other publishers that I've had experience trying to submit to or inquiry letters, I mean, as an author, any author can relate to. Rejection is a constant thing. Like, I had so many rejection letters that I could fill up a whole room with it. So, you know, but I wanted to take a chance and investigate, so that's what I did. And she was really nice. She gave me the opportunity to talk, and she was like, I'll even schedule a time we can, you know, Zoom chat or whatever. And that's unheard of for, like, a publishing house mm-hmm. to take time to talk to someone that's not even signed. And mm-hmm. so I took the opportunity, and, you know, we just kind of melded together and submitted my first work, Ashes, and I got accepted a couple weeks later. And, you know, rest is written history. Mm-hmm. So what I really love about Curious Corbett is they give creative freedom for their authors. And they actually work with you. They work with you with editing. We have our own editing team, and they're very dedicated. They communicate very well. They're very thorough. And you can approve or disapprove the edits they did, but your goal is to make the invest in a work. And that's very important, investing in a potential author's work. So I really love the atmosphere. It's a queer-based pop press as well, so we're a big supporter of LGBTQ community, and it's just a very well encouraging community to be around. Such a wonderful fellowship with other authors, and we have a Discord page where readers or audience members can engage with us and ask us questions and get the latest scoop of what's going on. So it's very positive community.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I realized that they seem like they came along all of a sudden, and I started seeing more and more of their authors. In fact, I do believe several authors that I can think of off the top of my head have published with Curious Corvid. So kudos to them for doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's how I got introduced to Firebird, was through another author from Curious Corbett that I know, our fantasy author, Mark Piggott, submits a lot to the Firebook Awards. So I'm like, you know what, if he's won a bunch of awards there, I'll give it a shot. Lo and behold, here we are.
Yes, Mark Piggott, I love his work as well. Oh, that's so funny. I love how everything intersects and connects, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's a small world if you really think about it.
It really is. All right, well, I'm glad we touched on that, because that was on my brain to highlight. All right, back to you. I want to know, what drew you to study 19th century Gothic literature, and what aspects of that genre resonate most with you?
So I was in graduate studies, and I was at the point where I was trying to figure out what my subject should be for my thesis, and I had my heart set on medieval literature at first, so I took a lot of classes on King Arthur, Chaucer, and I've read like Middle English and even like Middle English prose, which is slightly different from poetry. So I was all set to do that, and then the professor, our only professor for medieval literature, retired, and he couldn't take me as one of his students to do a thesis further. So at that time, I started thinking, well, what else could I do? It so happens that also during that time, I was taking a lot of schools of thought, literary theory, which is advanced thought, and one of the text that I was using it on, because there was a class that we had to use it for. We had our choice of three texts. It was like Shakespeare's Macbeth, Toni Morrison's Beloved, and then the third choice was Frankenstein. Well, I was already reading Frankenstein during the semester break, because my father gave it to me as a Christmas present. It was the spring semester that was coming up, so my father was going through cancer later on through the year. So before he got sick, that was like one of the last gifts he gave to me, was a Frankenstein book. There's a hard cover of like Barnes & Noble edition of it. So I read it through break and I fell in love with it. And then, you know, opportunity came when I was taking that one course on literary theory, that those are one of the choices. So I chose that book. And then next thing you know it, during that summer, another course came up for Frankenstein called Frankenstein in Context. So I started naturally just building all this research on Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what, I'll work on this book as my thesis. I've already done all this work. Why not delve further? And sure enough, I just started falling more in love with the 19th century Gothic literature of that time period. So I've always been fascinated with Gothic literature, creepy things since I was a kid. I grew up with, you know, like stories to tell in the dark, Alan Schwartz, you know, or R.L. Stein, Goosebumps, obviously. So creepy stuff has always been part of my life. I've always enjoyed it. And then reading Frankenstein kind of broke further of other Gothic works. I would start reading like Wuthering Heights, a lot of Anne Radcliffe. And then, of course, my all-time favorite, one of my all-time favorite writers, Edgar Allan Poe, obviously. Mm-hmm. So all that just kind of congealed together for my love and passion for literature, for 19th century Gothic literature. And yeah, I almost finished my thesis, but then my parents tragically passed away. So I had to get an actual job, and I saw opportunity with the funeral home. So I started working there.
Mm-hmm. I love people's stories. It's just that organic path that they have to take, and it creates who they are. And it's always fascinating to me to see how people become who they are based on their experiences. Now, your book, Ashes, you say that writing this novel was a way of catharsis in dealing with my own mental health. Can we talk can we talk about that? And then we'll take a peek into the book.
Sure, absolutely. So the way I started writing Ashes was actually an inspiration from my own mom, who I remember I was getting ready for university. And before I left, she kind of opened up her bedroom door, and she was kind of just still waking up, and she was like white as a sheet. And I asked her if she was like okay, and she's like, no, I had a really bad nightmare. And she told me about her nightmare. And if you recall the prologue of Ashes, it has a dream sequence in the beginning where the main character Alice is going through her family home, and she goes up in the attic and she sees all her family relatives in the attic, and her dad asks her for a dance, which is really weird. And then he says, don't look at them, which means don't look at your family relatives, but she can't help but look at them. And then eventually, as she's dancing with her father, she turns to him and then sees that he crumples right into ashes right before her eyes, along with her other family relatives that surround her. So that was the dream that kind of like my mom had, except it was at a house that she knew in Franklin, Pennsylvania, one of the old like Victorian style houses. And she used to go like kind of explore the house when she was younger with her brother. And she just had a dream about that house with her family relatives in there, and they all withered into ashes. Mm. So when she told me that, I was really inspired by that. I'm like, I got to write about that. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote that first prologue section, I knew I had a story about death of some nature, especially when the last name Reaper, I just put that as a temporary plate, but it kind of stuck as I started writing the book. So, and it's an actual last name. It's an Irish last name. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. So it just kind of grew from there, and it's just amazing how you can be inspired by others. And since it's about death, I'm like, well, what are my greatest fears about death? Well, death of losing my own dog, death of losing my own parents. You know, shockingly, after I wrote Ashes and that was published, you know, my parents did die and my dog did die. So it's like my fears actually came true. Yeah. So it's really weird. So that book really has all the things that I'm afraid of, and a lot of the things that I was going through at a time as my dad was very sick. I couldn't really sleep very well. I was having insomnia issues, which Alice has those issues as well, nightmares, insomnia, and all those nightmares that Alice has in the books are actually nightmares that I've had. So they were good for writing materials, obviously, and as a way for me to sort out what was going on around me. You know, it's just eerie how a book like that, and then you publish it, and then it later kind of comes true in a way because, you know, your parents are gone and your dog died, and, you know, you're all alone. But it's a very much more meaningful book because of how it's affected others to have read it. So that's great.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of that as you were speaking, how, you know, you said it was cathartic for you, and I'm sure it was healing for you. But then you put it out in the world and it resonates with others as well. And so that's got to be a great feeling too.
Oh, yes, because the book has very difficult themes that not many people would want to talk about openly. Mm-hmm. It deals with not only mental health and trauma and how to deal with that trauma, but it deals with, like, you know, themes of suicide, which is very touchy. And each and every character in that novel has their own set of problems that are relatable to others. So, you know, I hope that when people pick it up, they can find a way to have a cathartic experience themselves and be transformed. I remember one person who read it actually made a quick video blog on Instagram, and he was just out in the woods, and he read my novel while there, and he gave praise to how much of a spiritual transformation he kind of felt from it, because he could relate to a lot of the things, not only that Alice was going through, but what other characters go through. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really powerful when you have a work like that and it speaks to others. That's really important about literature. As I have written in my book, there's a quote that says, like, books are the souls of the people who write them and the hearts of the people who read them. Mm-hmm. So that's a really strong foundation.
Absolutely. You draw inspiration from vulnerability. And that in and of itself is exceptional because so many people shy away from vulnerability. Nobody likes that feeling of vulnerability. So for you to say that you are inspired by that is quite something and kind of a testament to the quality of your writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's important because yes, a lot of those are from my own experiences. And, you know, a couple authors actually do that. For example, like Scott Fitzgerald, The Great Gatsby, he's borrowed, like, a lot of his real-life experiences and weaved it into fiction. It's called a roman de clef. It's where true life events are intertwined with fiction. So I just think that's a really great motif for me to explore, because being vulnerable like that, I mean, you think about it, yes, I've had all these experiences and they're unique to me because I've experienced them, but at the same time they're very universal as well because others have gone through similar things too.
Yes,
I've noticed a lot that even though plot is important, a lot of people tend to latch on to characters. Mm-hmm. Character growth is very important. They need to feel, a reader feels like they're in this journey with this character. So that's just, I think vulnerability plays a very important part of, you know, developing characters too. Because what I do with characters is, yes, I infuse parts of myself, but most of all, I also infuse other people that I know. I kind of mix up their personalities together, you know, to create one unique character. So I think that's a really good thing, you know.
Yes. I'm thinking about, like, the themes of romanticism, such as the emphasis on emotion and nature. How does that interplay with the darker elements of Gothic literature? How do you meld those together?
So a lot of people have noticed that I tend to use motifs from, like, the classics, which a lot of the classics have romanticism in them, in such a way, admiring nature, or you know, internal conflict. But I tend to put that in my own twist by not only infusing actual experiences that I've had, but just using what I've kind of learned in school about romanticism. So it kind of infuses what some writers have called the modern Gothic, but it still leaves room for, you know, a newer work like Ashes still leaves room for like an older style narrative, sort of, because I use a lot of the way I write the diction is very classic in a way. So if you're if you like works by like Edgar Allan Poe or even Mary Shelley, you'll find kind of like influences. And I use pretext in the novel as well, quotes by authors that Alice really likes, which are Gothic as well. But that's a way for the reader to kind of stay in Alice's world, and each of those quotes kind of depicts or gives hints about what that chapter is going to like entail. So there's all these different elements here that just infuses with romanticism and the way I obviously just write naturally. So mm-hmm. It's a little complicated.
Do you find that your background as a funeral director working in funeral homes, does that allow you to explore certain topics or emotions, perhaps in a way that other writers might not be able to do?
It's made me, so currently right now, Ashes is going under a second edition because it's done well. And, it also, my publisher and I agreed that it deserved more attention because of the past editors we had. We felt like they weren't as thorough the head chief, but we got a new head chief editor. And, she's great, and the team as a whole is great. So we decided to do a second edition, which means I could go back and make a few changes. And even the funeral practices that I had in that book, I've kind of amplified a bit because of my experience mm-hmm. Working in a funeral home. I just changed certain terminology and, edited a bit, tweaks here and there. So in some ways, yeah, working at a funeral home has really elevated that kind of writing style with the Gothic and more of a sorrowful, grieving type of genre. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that line of work, you also have to be emotionally intelligent.
Yes.
So you've got to be, you have to realize, like, everybody that walks through a funeral home door, front door, they're having the worst day of their life. So mm-hmm. you got to be as compassionate as you can, but also be firm and just support them. You know, I just want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I really love what I do, being as an apprentice
mm-hmm.
On my way to a full licensed funeral director.
Right, right. Fascinating. You are fascinating. All righty. Well, let's now switch a little bit here and get over to the book Moonglade, a biographical collection of poems. And by the way, I love the cover.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was done by our graphic designer for Curious Corvid Publishing. That's Mark McClish. He also has a sci-fi novel. It's a young adult novel. It's called A Horror Sonder. It's really great. It has his own illustrations in there. Mm. And it's about a book about destiny and one's own destiny. It's won a lot of awards. It became a top bestseller on Amazon at one point. It's a really great book, and I highly recommend it. If you like, sci-fi-ish work.
Right. So give us a peek into the book, why you wrote it, what folks can expect to find, and then maybe we'll have you read one or two poems.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Moonglade was originally, I mentioned earlier that I self-published a work before going to Curious Corvid and finding the logarithm of their website, obviously. So before Moonglade became Moonglade, it was a work called Phases of Love's Moon, which I originally published by myself. I published it because a friend of mine who also writes the introduction, his name's Patrick, he's like one of my closest friends. We nerd out about literature. We met in Cleveland State University, took a lot of Shakespeare and a romantic period literature courses together. So, you know, we'll sit there and drink our tea, maybe have a nice cocktail and talk and nerd out about what we're reading or whatever. And we talk in depth about it. So it so happens with these poetry. He looked at some of my poetry because I wanted his insight, because he's very insightful about poetry. And he shares some of his works in progress too. And he's like, he looks at and reads a couple of these poems, like Heart to Heart, or like Forbidden, my earlier stuff, which all the poems are in chronological order. I thought that was a good idea to show kind of how much darker the work gets and how much as a poet that I kind of grow over time. So he's like, you gotta publish these poems. I really like these poems. You should really try publishing them. And of course, I was kind of shy at first. He's like, dude, I will like write you an introduction. So I was like, okay, fine. So I just went with it. And it's, you know, best choice ever, because if I didn't do those, I wouldn't have been part of Curious Corpid. So it's amazing how all that is. So yeah, it's just all the poems are a collection over time. So I was writing that, I believe back in 2018, I started writing poetry. While I was taking like poetry courses at university, and I was just inspired by that and learning poetic techniques like syllables and how stressed or unstressed line could, what does that indicate, enjambment, you know, all these literary terms kind of like inspired me, and along with the poems that I was reading at the time. So that's kind of how it all started. And then I just started realizing how intimate poetry really is as a language. And, you know, romance is a very deep, intimate part of me and my luck with it, and relationships, and then also self-love about myself. So that's like the pivotal themes going on around Moonglade. So it's an autobiographical account, but all about, you know, certain parts of my life going from 2018 until 2022.
Oh my. You used the word intimate, and we were talking about vulnerability before. I've always felt that poetry, more so than prose, any novel that somebody could write, is just really bearing your heart and putting that vulnerability right out there. It's like a beating heart on the table for everybody to see and maybe poke at. And it's, I think it's more scary to put poetry out there than it is anything else.
Yeah, I was really scared about this, and especially there's certain techniques I use. Like, for example, there's some technique I use called acrostic, which if you look closely at some certain poems, they'll have the name of the person or subject that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So it'll spell out the name of the person I was romantically involved with. And so it's kind of, you know, like, well, is that too much or is that just creative? So, but, you know, there's a little bit something different in the work anytime I'm hoping, like, if someone picks it up and they're like, oh, I didn't see that before, mm-hmm. or something like that. So I think it's a good technique to put in there.
Oh, like little Easter eggs. Whether somebody finds it or not, you know they're in there.
Yep, exactly.
Got it. All right, is there one in particular that you would like to share with us?
I guess I could read this one. It's called Raven Sonata, which is on page 84 of the book. The raven dreams and lets me fly, her beauty vivid, stands, sings, crowds gather, me next to her nigh, play my six-string guitar rings. The raven dreams as I hold her and feel her hourglass waist. You two together, they confer, arms gentle, her smile graced. The raven dreams, a desire more sends. No, we are on the borderline of friends. So that poem was actually a dream I had about a woman that I was really infatuated with. In fact, she is what I have in the dedication in the beginning, the dedication section, I say to my muse, Megan Kibler, which I met during COVID times, and she was this beautiful woman, tall, blonde hair, and she has the most beautiful singing voice I ever heard, and she's really talented at theater and singing and opera and a whole range of talents there. And me being a musician myself, I was inspired by her a lot of times. So there are certain poems about her with that. So that's just one of them that based off of a dream that I had.
Mm. So special, so special. Does she know? Did she read the book?
I have no idea, but maybe she will.
There you go. Oh, thank you for sharing that. That gives us just a little bit of insight as to what we can expect when we get a copy of Moonglade. Oh, David, how about anything else? We've talked about a few things, and I'm sure there's more, but anything in particular that you wanted to cover today that we have not highlighted?
As far as if anyone's interested in other works, I do have another work out, which I did submit to the Firebird Book Award, but it had honorable mentions. There's two books, actually. One other book that I have with Curious Corvette Publishing is called The Antiquarian, mm-hmm. and it is a historical gothic narrative. It's an epistolary novel, so the best comparison I could make with that is if you love works like Dracula or even like Wuthering Heights, you'll get those kind of vibes in that kind of book. It's a book that took me 8 years because of all the research, but it basically tells the story of a guy named Nicholas Ainsworth, and he goes on an expedition in search of historical artifacts and deviant burials in Romania. And suddenly the Nazi occupation comes to the country of Romania, which then he is forced into abandoning his work. And then he finds shelter in a mysterious old castle that appears to be abandoned, and he questions his own sanity. So it's a really great work. I recommend that. And then that received an honorable mention with Firebird. It has illustrations in the book as well by Mitch Green, which are absolutely beautiful. And then I also have a young YA novel called Lightways, which is not gothic, and it's published with another publishing house called Quill Keepers Press, which is like a partnership, sister kind of like a publishing house with Curious Corvette Publishing. And it's just a YA World War II novel that has two stories. One story is told in the present and one is told in the past, and it kind of comes together, and there's a lot of twists and turns, a lot of light. It is a Holocaust backdrop book, but it also depicts, which some people have said, that it really highlights the anti-Semitism of, what's going on and with religion, with Judaism, and it's very powerful in that kind of way because there's not that much literature. At least one person felt like that really speaks so strongly, and yet it just shows how dangerous a Mahan David, I think it's called, but it's the Star of David. Mm-hmm. How dangerous even that can be wearing around your neck during modern times can be. Mm-hmm. So it's a work that I wrote when I was in middle school, and I held on to it, nurtured it by editing it through the years, and finally got published. So that's another thing of encouragement is if you've written something, don't give up on it. Just keep working on it, edit it. And even if you think it's garbage, just hold on to it, because you never know if you have to go back to it, because that's how like Ashes was written, was certain sections I only had. And one section in particular where the narrative switches over to another narrator, his name's Oscar. It kind of gives a background of another character that ties heavily into the story. His story I kind of had as a short story. I didn't know what to do with it until I started developing Ashes further. I'm like, oh, I could combine this with this, and it works perfectly. So that's my best of advice, I guess I could say.
Don't toss anything out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, if you would then, please share contact information where folks can find out more about David Grinnell and where they can get copies of your books.
Absolutely. So you can go to, I have an Instagram page called David PG Books. You can add me on there. And if you reach out to me, I'd be happy to reach out to you as well. I love talking about literature, obviously, and anything of that nature. So feel free to reach out to me with that. Books you can find anywhere, obviously, through Amazon. Even Barnes & Noble, if you go to the like front desk and request a book by me, they can look it up and they can order it for you. And, of course, you can go directly to our the Curious Carbon website. We have our store page there. And if you order a copy of my books or any of the books by like other Curious Carbons, there's special like packaging, and my publisher really takes time in like really making the package, the book itself, feel really special and unique. And like it's like a package that you receive in the mail, and you know it's personal to you because she'll put like a handwritten thank you note, saying how grateful to purchase the work, and she also enjoys it. She gives you stickers and other cool kind of like neat knickknacks. It's a quite unique packaging experience. Yeah, so she really takes the time for that. So if you do order from the website, it'll be well worth the wait because she really takes the time, even though she's like in charge of everything and overrunning everything. She really make sure, like, okay, this person's going to get a really true experience.
Curious Corbett, is it .com?
Yes.
Okay.
CuriousCorbettPublishing.com.
Okay. CuriousCorbettPublishing.com. David PG Books at Instagram. So we're speaking with David Grinnell. Winning books are Ashes, Moonglade, The Antiquarian. And what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you. Keep writing and keep sharing with us.
Thank you, and thank you, Pat, for everything you do and giving back and, you know, doing donations for people who submit. That's very, truly a remarkable thing. So I will always, you know, support something like that, so that's very important.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to know you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.